The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
To Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. You are on the clock with Erin Green on this Wednesday, the 25th of August, 2021. And thank you for your patience as we listen to a little bit of Miriam Makeba to open the show. There's plenty of reasons why I was inspired to play that. But I say, and most of all, I play that for the ancestors so that they remember to hold our loved ones close as they travel across this realm or through this realm to the next. If y'all don't know who Miriam Makeba is, she's a revolutionary South African woman, who I only learned recently was integral in the struggle for freedom on the continent. This time I thought she was just, you know, this phenomenal performer. But then you realize that at that age, at that time, that there's nobody who is just performing. Everybody has a function. Everybody is expressing powerful messages. They didn't take their talent and their opportunity lightly. And so I hope you all enjoyed. That was Pata Pata by Miriam Makeba. Good morning, everybody. And I want to say good morning to the officers on patrol on Bay Street opposite the Hilton. I want to recite something for you guys that I printed this morning on my way to work. The Serenity Prayer. The prayer is to accept, Lord, help me to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Dear officers, and I say officers because I'm not the name or the number of the particular officer I am speaking to. You see, in this life, I have learned that this prayer is important. I have learned that I have to learn to accept the things I cannot change and to find the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. But let me tell you something, officers. I could make a change in my country. I could, just by playing my role as a citizen, I could make a change. And I am offended. I'm offended that you would suggest that I'm wasting your time by helping you do your job. See, here's what happened. I'm sitting at a red light on, I think, Duke Street or King Street, intersecting with Cumberland and Blue Hill Road, right? I'm sitting at the light, and my light is red, and Blue Hill's light is green, and there's a bus that has decided that they're going to stop in front of the kiosk to buy something on the road, you know, while his light is green, obstructing traffic. Now, things like this happen all the time on Cumberland Street. Drivers forcing their way into the westbound lane, ignoring the right-of-way of of drivers that have planned ahead and ensured that they were in the lane they need to be in when they get to this intersection. Cars speeding over the hill, ignoring pedestrians on the crossing, all manner of things happen on Cumberland Street. In fact, this morning, I witnessed what appears to be evidence of another traffic accident, where it appears as if a vehicle may have run into a wall. Now, I don't know if y'all remember less than a year ago, somebody was killed on that road. Right? So when a citizen says to you, hey, maybe y'all should just walk around the corner, there's lots of infractions to witness there, you shouldn't get upset at that citizen. Maybe you should get upset at the supervisor that keeps telling you you have to stand at that corner, but don't you dare turn and walk up Cumberland Street. That's who you should get upset at. See, I have a question on my list of questions for candidates, and I think everybody in this country should have to answer this question. And the question is, who do you swear allegiance to? And I can expand the question. Who do you work for, and who do you swear allegiance to? You see, the next time a police officer tells me they work for the commissioner of police and not for me, the citizen, that gonna be the time where I start my own political party with the aim to win the government to show y'all how this government's supposed to run. How dare a police officer tell a citizen, I don't work for you? In the same vein, how dare a politician say or even merely suggest that they don't work for citizens, that they work in the interest of their party, or they work in the interest of their cabinet, or they work in the interest of their administration separate from the people who that administration serves? You see, I've had a lot of run-ins with the police. Fortunately, most of them have been positive, but some of them not so much. Like the time two senior officers came to my house to tell me and my mother that Patelco has determined that the threat is not sufficient to warrant further investigation into who was stalking me. Another memorable moment with the police is when I was sitting in the road holding a young man's head in my lap as he was bleeding from several parts of his body. He had been knocked down by a car, a hit-and-run driver. This big strapping oak tree of a man tried to get up out the road and fully snapped his leg, trying to pull himself to safety, because the people driving in the road didn't realize that he was in it, injured, and barely able to move. You see, that's not the best part of the story. The best part of the story is I sat in that road for almost 30 minutes plus with that boy's head in my lap. And would you believe a police car drove past us? At least they intended to drive past us, because my partner had to throw her body on the police car to force it, to cause it to come to a stop, to have those officers tell us, well, they go radio it in. And all we were asking for is for the officers to direct traffic and to make sure that I was safe as I was sitting in the road with this man that we were concerned about moving due to his injuries. See, I don't expect police officers to be discouraged from doing the right thing. That's what we will not tolerate in this country. Now, I know it could be easy to slip into that mode, because all around you, people in positions of authority are encouraging people under their control and care or supervision to do the wrong thing, to forget the right thing, for the sake of political expediency. And in fact, we've developed a society where we leave our children bewildered every day as they try to make sense of what it is they witness around them for our own comfort, for our own ease of annoyance, right? We will allow things to happen in front of us that we know should not be happening. Now, there's a level at which this discussion becomes tricky, right? Because then we walk over these lines of privacy. But surely there are spaces recognize and acknowledge that our actions impact others, and if they impact them negatively, they should be moderated. And one of those spaces is on the roadways that we all share. I ain't telling you who to believe in. I ain't telling you what to put in your body. But what I'm telling you is if you share these roadways with us, with me, there's a duty of care that you owe to me and everybody around you. I can't tell y'all how disappointed I am in that officer, because that officer knows me. Because every day I come to work, I point and I see those officers stationed there. I point out to them that the traffic infractions they so desperately seek are on the other side of the corner. Considering there was a traffic fatality there almost a year ago, considering the horrendous event that happened at Government House years ago. Now, you may say, oh, Aaron, where's the connection between that? Where's the connection between that? The connection is, who is in charge of this place? Who is in charge? And who is responsible for these things? Because one thing I know, the police's job is to ensure that citizens do not suffer at the tyranny of other citizens who don't want to behave. And that goes across the board. To employers that don't know how to keep their hands in their pockets or don't know how to fasten their belts properly. Some of y'all have a nickname called drop your pants, so and so. To the police officers that molest junior officers in their care or allow suspects to be brutalized in their care. And to every politician that's vying for frontline politics, know that this is your job too. Don't follow the D'Aguila model. This is your job too. There's so many things we could have been talking about. But it's important, it's incumbent, the police know that ordinary citizens rely on you doing your job for their survival. So I want to say to the Honorable Marvin Dames, why y'all don't pay as much attention to the people's business as you do to your own political parties and agendas, right? How quickly y'all found the perpetrator, the grand destroyer of poster board, and had them prosecuted? How quickly, with such ease and passion and attention? If only you would pay that attention to the vulnerable among us. That's what we need. That's what we're voting for. Let me get to these text lines and then I'm going to bring my guests into the show this morning. In fact, give me a second, texters. I got a very important message I missed here. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. And I have a brief message for you today about the Public Procurement Act. Did you know that the Public Procurement Act 2021 will take effect on September 1st? The Public Procurement Act replaces the Financial Administrative and Audit Act and will increase greater transparency and accountability in public procurement. This message is brought to you by the Ministry of Finance. Let me get to these texts. Good morning. I just really need to say this. The two political parties that have those signs all over the place make no sense. Signs don't vote. Their constituents out here starving and can't pay their bills. They could use some of that money to help their fellow men. Total nonsense. Now, they tax elderly people at government clinic for hours. No doctor. This is what we voting. Morning, Aaron. A cabinet minister's car hit another vehicle on Fifth Terrace a while ago. Thank you for that note, Dear RBPF, could you all attend to that quickly so the politicians could get back about the people's business? Another text, so Mrs. Green, who does the commissioner work for? Minister of National Security, and don't they all work for the people? This shows the incompetence of some officers. One once told me on the streets, this ain't the court. There's no freedom of speech here. Foolishness. Another text. These officers, just like Dr. Minnis, they ignore the obvious gradual signs of decay and decline, then panic when the system completely breaks down. Like, who could have known? Then they give us the, we need everybody to work together speech, but it's too late, we hear. And please tell Papa to stay inside and stand 6 feet from everyone. No hugging. We need him around for another 50 or so. In fact, that's the first person I put, the first set of people I put in under restrictions, heavy restrictions. Perry, Ingram, all y'all gay go into isolation until y'all write these books. We need you to document everything. We need every secret. We need everything on the table. So we could understand what brought us here, and we could understand what we need to do to move us forward. All of the treasures, all the institutional knowledge, and you can be out here, raying, and just roading with these people? No, we need you all to keep yourself safe. So that we could continue to build this country with all the tools we have available to us. Arlington. Is it a good time for a break? When we come back from the break, bring in my guests, Dr. Ethel, and for a brief moment, Miss Alicia Wallace, to talk about political culture and the upcoming general election 2021.
No matter how careful you are, sometimes accidents happen. When it comes to your auto insurance coverage, we know what you need. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we provide superior customer service to the claims department that you can trust to get you quickly and safely back on the road again. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the Solution. Sponsor On the Clock of Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The rocks are 2-4-2. The count depends on you. So tell Tito, go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Smart talk all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news and smart talk all day. You see that story I tell just now, Arlington? That story is entitled The Last Time I Wore a Dress, because I got so much blood on my clothing, right? I had to change immediately. And the closest friend only had dresses in my size. That's the last time I wore a dress. Boy, and look here, that boy is an oak tree of a man. I almost married him that day. I tell him, you survived that hit and get up and try pull yourself out the road? My man, you're an exemplary man. You're the type of man we need to save in our country. Boy. Anyway, like I said on Monday, We have a short time to the and while we probably have minimal engagement from politicians, I also want to have conversations with the voters to cause us to think about how we vote, how we typically vote, how we look at politics, and to add a few different perspectives that may shift the way that you've been doing this politics thing. So I want to bring into the discussion now my guest, Dr. Nicolette Bethel. Good morning.
Good morning. I took a while to find my mute button. Good morning, everybody.
That's okay. A good teacher always makes a good student.
Well, I don't, yeah, let's hope.
Let's hope. Good morning, Alicia Wallace. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. So if you, well, please introduce yourself briefly, Dr. Bethel and Alicia Wallace.
Well, I am Nicolette Bethel. I am University of the Bahamas an anthropologist. I am an activist in the cultural sphere and in the interest of democracy.
Awesome. Ms. Wallace?
I'm Alicia Wallace. I'm the director of Equality Bahamas, which promotes women's and LGBTIQ+ rights as human rights.
Absolutely. So one of the reasons why I have the two of y'all here is because both Dr. Bethel and Ms. Wallace would have in 2017 ran a political campaign called Out the Box. And it was perhaps one of the most radical campaigns we've seen in this town in a long time. And the campaign, as I recall it, was focused on encouraging or challenging electoral or voter reform and political reform. Can you tell us briefly about the campaign and what it was about?
Okay, let me let Alicia kick off. Sorry, Alicia, to put you on the spot.
No worries. Yeah, so we noticed in the last election, I think what really prompted this was seeing the very low number of voter registrants. So we started asking questions about why this might be. Why aren't people registering to vote? Why are people uninterested in voting? What will it mean if we have a low voter turnout? And we arrived at the conclusion that people were not satisfied with the options available, were just disenchanted by the entire system, want a different system. And also that if the voter turnout is low, the overall takeaway that most people would have is that we're just apathetic and we don't care. Mm-hmm. So the two things really didn't add up. So we were trying to think of a way to be able to engage people, to get people to participate in the process, but not force them to choose the lesser of the evils, as we always talk about. So we thought about how people could participate, but still register their discontent with this idea that, you know, you can still participate in this process, register your discontent by spoiling your ballot if you don't have a candidate that you support. And we also encourage people to, you know, really talk to the candidates, figure out where they stand. Of course, there's consideration to party, but we really encourage people to talk to independent candidates in particular, and candidates from the so-called third parties, understanding that, you know, we would be in a really bad situation as we are now if we ended up with a supermajority. So really we were trying to expand the conversations about democracy, draw attention to some of the issues with the system, call for various levels of reform, including campaign finance reform and greater participation of the public, of the electorate, in actually selecting the candidates, because one of the greatest points of contention for us as a people is that we don't get to choose these candidates. These people, they just are placed in front of us and we're forced to choose, and that's just not working for us anymore. So we wanted to provide another option.
Absolutely. Do you think the campaign achieved its intended goals?
You know, I think that it achieved some goals that maybe weren't intended. For example, after the election, the PLP reformed its constitution somewhat. It didn't really make a whole lot of changes, but people took note. People took note of what we were saying. And so, and I also think that the proliferation of third parties and of independents may have a little bit of connection with that. I think we're also in a particularly volatile time, and so that might explain it as well. But having started the discussion about democracy and how our system works and how you don't have to feel like you are boxed into two bad choices and think about alternatives, I think that what we see is the slate of candidates across the board is not unconnected to that action.
Yes, absolutely. I think that I've seen, now it may not have been your intended goal, but I think I have seen a positive impact of that campaign now in 2021. In fact, I'll proudly say that I saw somebody suggesting spoiling their ballot who last time in 2017 thought it was the silliest and most dangerous idea ever. And this time they say they prepared to vote for Mia Motley.
I for Mia.
Right?
And I think Mia Motley would be a great choice.
I can put Mia and Aaron, right? Like Mia as PM and Aaron as Deputy Prime Minister, right? Put it straight on the ballot. So let me ask you a question. Why not do it again?
Why not do the campaign again?
Yeah.
Or why not spoil your ballot again?
Well, no, why not do the campaign again? See, I would have done my spoil the ballot campaign because I had a similar, less academic campaign. But now that I'm on the radio, I can't really do it, right? But why not do the campaign again?
So, I mean, if you're asking why we haven't done it again, COVID and springing a snap election have a lot to do with it. But also, I think one of the side effects of what we did before as well is looking at our electoral system. One of the things that I expressed and that my students were actually looking at in 2017 is this lunacy that we have about everybody having to register every time there's an election. This is a way to decrease democracy, to discourage voter turnout. Mm-hmm. And it was actually put in place, I have since learned, since 2017, through conversations with Stephen Arana, who is researching Bahamian constitutional history, that this was put in place when we got our universal suffrage. It was put in place by the United Bahamian Party to control people who would be able to vote in that first election when electoral reform was starting, either in 1962. I think it was in 1962, possibly in 1964. I'm not sure exactly when it was put in place, but it was consciously used as a tactic to discourage people from voting by putting an extra step between being eligible to vote and being able to vote. There is no good reason to have individuals turn up to register themselves personally when you have birth certificates and you have documents that can verify people's citizenship and age of voting.
And if
in most countries, that's what you do when you turn 18. In Canada, for example, you get an email from your province saying, congratulations, you are now on the electoral register. You may vote in elections. Use your driver's license.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that the fact that those systems, like birth certificate and all the document systems, are malfunctioning or null or perhaps suffering from small injections of malfeasance, right? But just because that may be happening, that shouldn't disadvantage the citizen. That is a matter for the state to fix, not to disadvantage the citizen because of.
No, it shouldn't. And that is simply a marker of, you know, a lot of people see conspiracy where I just see incompetence. That's just a marker of the fact that the people who were asked to digitize the documents in the registry were bad copiers.
No.
And there was nobody double checking and triple checking. We did not take those records seriously enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be fixed.
Now, I know that Alicia Wallace, you ran another campaign leading up to the 2017 general election, focused on what appeared to be barriers or obstacles to registering to vote even. And I think, can you remind us of the name of the campaign?
Yes, that was the hashtag Too Sexy to Vote campus, actually started by Ava Turnquest.
Oh,
and
great.
I joined her and
awesome,
got
Ava.
Some other people, including Aaron Green, to join us in challenging the turning away specifically of women from registering to vote for having exposed shoulders or daring to have cleavage. And, you know, this was a major issue. We saw reports at the end of 2016 about people who were turned away multiple times. They kept going away, trying another outfit, coming again, being turned away. These are people catching the bus, you know, coming in their work uniforms, you know, taking time off work to try to register to vote and being turned away. And when we knew that we had to challenge it, so we showed up in a number of women in all manner of dress and basically dared them to turn us away.
Yeah, absolutely. And look here, I went to a thrift store and I find a 6-piece coat suit. Like I find when people say the wrongest thing for me to wear, I find to go up there. And nobody turned me away. But I think at that point they realized, you know, for somebody to challenge me. I think most people in these situations, they're not trying to be barriers to people. You know, like Nicolette said, that it's more a matter of incompetence than corruption, right? Or ignorance and not understanding the system.
Usually, yeah.
For the frontline workers, you could say that.
Yeah.
But there was an instruction that was given. They didn't make it up out of their heads.
You're right.
There was an instruction that was given across the board of not allowing people, and it's still in place, of not allowing women in particular. And I turned on my video so you could see my arms are bare. Hello. And I think it's appropriate because BPL down and it's hot.
Yes. And imagine in a country where BPL has so many institutional issues, right?
Exactly.
The dress code for going this would be one set for a global north temperature.
But for women in particular, so there are still women being turned away. Kendi Adams was turned away from a government agency because her feet were in sandals and they could see her toes.
Oh, the
there was also
the
someone
horror.
Who was turned away for wearing shorts, and she went to her car and fashioned a skirt out of a shopping bag that turned out to be shorter than the shorts and was let in.
On the one hand, it's not malfeasance, maybe on the frontline staff's part, but there's something that in sociology we refer to as a malaise of the bureaucrat, right? Which is, if I have to suffer under the system because I'm working in this, I share my suffering and make everybody else suffer as well,
yes.
Even when that suffering is absurd. And I think this is what we're seeing. And a lot of this comes from middle-level supervisors who are misinterpreting or misunderstanding or simply applying. There's a clause in general orders, for example, that talks about what the appropriate dress is for civil servants.
Yes.
And it has been there since the 1960s. Aaron, I'm sure you're well aware of it.
Oh, yes. I was thrown out of a magistrate's court because I didn't follow the general orders dress code.
Right, but general orders is for civil servants. It's not for the civilians.
I know.
That's the first thing.
I know.
And so I think what is happening is you see this, people retire, and so they pass it on to everybody else, but we do not understand the purpose of government, who we are here to serve, and we have not revised these orders since the 1960s. These are orders that says that women can't wear pants unless they're wearing a jacket that covers their behinds.
Right. And we noted it has to be something like punitive in the minds of people, because it's not like these people care about the general orders. Just let me give an aside. John right. Pinder is running in red in Fox Hill for days and days and days while he was sitting at a government job. So it's not like, you know, we are all about protecting the sanctity of general orders. Why, you know, but why is it that in these spaces we're so strict in its enforcement, you know? It really begs me to ask the question, well, two questions. Who do we serve in these spaces? Who do we think we serve? Who do we think it's our function to serve? And on the other, have we had a devolution in politics and governance to the point where key and fundamental and foundational institutional knowledge and mandates are just lost now?
Another question, Aaron, is who do we disadvantage and
yes.
who deserves to be disadvantaged? Because there's this idea that certain people just don't deserve to have access.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right. And if you don't want to prioritize your money and get the right type of clothes you know you need, then that's on you. You must see don't want to vote. And that's intolerable in this society.
So I think part of the, I mean, you asked about a devolution, right?
Yeah.
I think there's two questions there. One is the whole idea of institutional knowledge. We are losing it at an alarming rate in the civil service. And that could be that has its serious disadvantages. But when we talk about devolution, what has not happened is we have not, as a people, and last time I framed it in terms of the leaders, but let's responsibility for everybody. Let's all share the responsibility. As a people, we have not decolonized ourselves sufficiently. You asked, who do we think we work for?
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of us across every sector in this country, fundamentally, I ask people to tell me I'm wrong, but I believe that somewhere in our, what we would call our lizard brain in the back of our heads, we all believe we are working for some massa, not for ourselves or our fellow citizens. Mm-hmm. We still have not created the spaces in which we can understand that we have value. We have this hierarchical default, which we see in this latest bill, this bill that is supposed to go before Parliament. And I'm kind of happy that the election got called before it was passed, because in the bill that deals with public health crises, all the power is given to two people, a minister and a prime minister. And that is a colonial structure.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there not some thought about how do we empower citizens to take this responsibility on? Every law that we have passed since independence gives a minister discretionary power to override parts of that law.
Yeah.
And this law to give the minister the right to write the regulations. This is not democratic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, do you think that political candidates are focused on issues like these, or are focused on this part of governance, right? These questions, these sort of conundrums. Like I say, another question I have on my list is for candidates and for citizens as well, right? How do you balance your obligation to the Constitution and the nation state construct, to constituents, to the party? How do you balance these things?
Question you asked, the answer to your first question is no.
Yeah. Okay, so let me slide right in there. Should the University of the Bahamas, A or B, academics generally outside of that formal structure, be doing more to grow and sustain healthy or in this country?
Yes. And I just want to say that I am working on something now, and I hope that it can come to fruition before the election. But anyway, let me not make excuses. There are certain obstacles, but what I have suggested to my colleagues in social sciences is that we run a crash course, probably through Zoom,
mm-hmm.
on how the Bahamian parliamentary system actually works. Because mm-hmm. we have a lot of misinformation out there because so much of our exposure is to the American system, which is different, fundamentally different from ours. And people assume that their system is superior to our Westminster model. And I will argue that it is not. In fact, I think the Westminster model is extremely robust. It is very versatile. It is almost, and forgive me if I offend anybody, but it's almost like the Anglican Church of a governmental system. In other words, it can take many, many, many forms, and it can meet you where you are if you use it correctly. Mm-hmm. But we don't know it. We don't understand. We are influenced deeply by the way in which Americans run their politics. And we think that those translate here.
Yeah, but they often don't.
And those people who know how it works use that against us.
Absolutely. Alicia, I'm hoping to have you on again to talk in depth about the policy paper or policy survey that you've been doing. I know that there's still time for people to participate in it. Can you tell us briefly about what it is and how people can participate before the upcoming election?
Yes, we are working on developing feminist standards for governance. So that means that we are setting our own agenda as the people of the Bahamas for what we want to see in the next term from election to 2027 or whenever the next election is going to be. And we're looking at 7 thematic areas in particular. We're looking at health, education, women and LGBTQI plus people, youth, social services, environment. And we're encouraging people to give feedback on these areas. Tell us about the challenges that you've noticed, your ideas, your thoughts on what should be taking place, what we should be doing to improve circumstances for everyone in the Bahamas, but centering vulnerable groups of people, including women, LGBT people, migrant people, people with disabilities, and people on the family islands who are often just completely left out because we treat the Bahamas like it's just New Providence. Yes. So this is a space for people to talk about whatever they want within these thematic areas. The questions are very big, so there's a lot of room to go. You can give a really simple answer or a very long and detailed answer. It's up to you. We also ask questions about 3 critical areas for us in the country right now, which are gender-based violence, climate change, and disaster management. How can we be dealing with these issues better, in a more comprehensive way, in a more substantive way, in a way that actually affects the lives of people and responds to the real life experiences of individuals, particularly the people? So we're inviting members of the public to lead the conversation. Usually during the election season, we get these manifestos and charters and things like that from the political parties. But this time around, we said, that's not what we need. We need to hear from the people what we want. We don't want to be sold an agenda. We need to be able to create that agenda for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just want to stick a pin quickly there and say to the third parties that took over the Speaker's People's Parliament event, I'm not sure if y'all are the people that the Speaker was meaning. I just want to remind you all of that. Alicia, give us the link to the survey. If you have pull it up.
It's tiny.cc/feminist, S as in standards, G as in governance.
Awesome.
And can you say it again? Sorry.
Say it again.
tiny.cc/feminist, S, G, standards for governance. Remember, the questions are very big. There are quite a few of them, but we welcome you to just answer one. You can skip questions. You can answer as many as you want. And there's also a space for you to join a working group that will be in more conversation about the responses that we get and figuring out how we pull it all together into a policy paper and into a list of demands that we present to the next administration.
Absolutely. And let me tell you guys why this is important. I know some of you guys are going to hear the word feminist and be like, well, this don't have anything to do with me. Here's why you should take a look at this survey, because it's one of the only surveys, it's one of the only opportunities for citizens to get their ideas and their policy ideas out there in a formulated, in an organized way to be presented to politicians. Now, I know the individual citizen could write a letter and send it in, but politicians look at numbers. So even if you say, oh, I ain't a feminist, take a look at the survey, look at some of the issues that are being raised and the language that's used, and maybe that can be helpful to you to form your own kind of questionnaire or questions for people around you. And here's why. We have allowed the political culture or the political class to dictate everything about politics. They even try to tell us how we're supposed to feel about our own vote. And so it's
they know less about many of the current politicians, and this is the difference between maybe the people who were founding fathers and today. Too many of the current politicians really don't understand our system themselves. Mm-hmm. They have not really had any chance to learn it. And they're simply there because they were picked by a party because they needed somebody to run in a constituency.
Yeah, that's it. And the danger of that is exactly what we are experiencing. Just, I think, yesterday or the day before yesterday, one of the media houses had a caption up implying or leaving the reader to infer that this election is between Minnis and Brave, when we know that's not even the type of political system that we have.
Precisely.
Right? Another narrative that the political class has spun is that this is a two-party system and it can only tolerate two-party, can tolerate many parties, is only two parties can sit as the administration and the opposition, which is totally different from only being able to tolerate two parties.
So actually, Aaron, let's correct that, because it doesn't mean that one party gets to you can have coalitions.
Exactly.
So the Westminster system is, this is why I think it's robust.
Yeah.
It supports many different points of view. It supports many different parties. In Canada, you've got three major parties, but many, many parties. And in Britain, and in, you see a proliferation of parties and perspectives. And if there is no majority in the House, then people have to
form
come
a coalition
together and form coalitions to create oppositions.
Absolutely.
And governments.
Nicolette, now I have to apologize. It's my bad time management. We're all out of time and I've got to read these texts. But the prize is that I get to invite you back on to continue this discussion. Because we, and Alicia, because we have a whole bunch to talk about. So let me just get to these. Ms. Green, please ask Ms. Bethel, does she prefer lead a horse to water or our boys? Everything don't have to be about politics, Erin. Give them a quick answer, Nicolette. Our boys or lead a horse?
If I had to pick one?
Yeah.
I would pick lead a horse to water simply because I am a play person more than an opera person.
There you go.
But they are both masterpieces. That's
right.
My personal.
And his politics in that too, Texter. Another text says Moultrie forced this early election when he threatened open parliament. Well, no, I think it's more than threatening open parliament. It may have been threatening open record books. Another text says, good morning, great show, and I like your station's approach to media. With regards to voting, help me to understand the voting centers. We have multiple constituencies in one voting center. I think this can lead to another super spreader event. Dear Texter, I will definitely return to the show with more information, and we're going to have that discussion as well. That's a great one. Another text, good morning, please give a definition of capitalism and of socialism. Texter, we don't have enough time, but I will bring that into the show this week. Another text, I have noticed most of the indoctrinated, educated sheep can never be cognitive of conspiracies, always denying overt conspiracy facts. It's disgusting, even though everything is materializing before our eyes. As far as globalist scientific...
I would love to just answer that particular text.
Go on.
When you show me that somebody, that any government department can process any government or less and do that across departments, then I'll believe in constituencies. But having worked in government and watched how inefficient we are, I cannot really comprehend how we can be inefficient in delivering basic services and yet be under some major conspiracy. Of course, I could be wrong.
I understand. I understand what you're saying. I get it. Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
I think it's giving a lot of credit to certain people, right?
Absolutely.
It totally is.
Absolutely. Another text says, this discussion is why local government is necessary. Another text says, good morning, Aaron and guests. Being in agreement with your campaign last election, I spoiled my ballot. While I was glad to do it, I was disappointed that there was no statistics of spoiled ballots. I would like to do it again because I have not seen changes towards a deeper democracy. However, due to COVID-19, I do not anticipate going to the poll this time. My question is, what else can voters do to our system to become involved in the selection of candidates? That is a great show, that one question alone. And I think I can have a vote on my show for the people who not go into the poll to text in and vote. It says... This text says, good day, Aaron Green. The other day, Levon Miller said some things I didn't agree with about women's poor performance in government, saying he understood why Bahamians don't vote for women. How are we changing the minds of people in a culture where men don't support women in leadership? I don't think that's what's happening at all. I think that Mr. Miller makes some fair assessments, and I think that it's a fair assessment that some of the women in politics are not performing at a standard that would suggest that we propel them forward just because they are women.
Well, if we say that, we also have to acknowledge that we have a lot of mediocre, underperforming, horrible men
also
that are members of parliament. Right. And for some reason, they're able to be mediocre, but women are supposed to be outstanding. And we're on. Yes, so we need to have conversations about that and about the training that politicians have, of their intentions when they get in there and what they're up against if they do have values and they're a part of a party system. That's a much deeper conversation that we need to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just, because that handsome man Miller looking at me right now, but that's a strong point that he's making. We can't just elect you because you're a woman. And don't think you're going to get away with poor performance because you're a woman or because you are part of a team with a lot of steam.
But also women are judged more harshly.
Yes,
so absolutely. I think that we need to have a conversation about creating and enabling environments for women to be able to participate in frontline politics. And that has been a major theme this year through the Commission on the Status of Women, as well as
absolutely
some of the other international mechanisms that had anniversaries this year. And again, that's a larger conversation that we need to have.
And I'm going to call women to stand and support women by helping them build their capacity. But we are almost out of time. Last two texts. Nope, not touching anything with the label feminist or feminism on it. That's where I can put all the mangoes then. Don't touch it. And this person says the text was not only about politics, I think, Nicolette. I'm going to save that text so we could get back to it. Thank you, texter. Thank you to my audience for the engagement. Thank you to Nicolette and Alicia for this wonderful conversation today. And know that I'm going to be inviting you back to continue part two. Thank you to my wonderful producer for keeping me on the clock. Because you know, Levon Miller is up next with Unleash, and he's got a lot to say, and I need you to listen. Have a great day, Bahamas. Stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
Bata is the name of a dance.